Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He is...
Larry Van Beek.
Larry Van Beek. Huh. I think I know you.
Yeah.
Yes, we've met somewhere before. anyway, no, now that we've got the pleasantries out of the way, Dr. Van Beek, it's good to see you as always.
Good to be here.
Yes, it's good to being here as well. what's going on today? Anyway, folks, thanks for joining us on this journey. Today, we're going to talk about Abraham. And as I pointed out in the pre-show, he had seven sons. But I'm not really one of them, actually. Sorry. We had a lot of fun with that in the pre-show. But anyway, Lair, why don't you introduce where you want us to go, and then we'll start this cast.
I thought, Steve, that we would do something very, very well known. Most people know this story of Abraham going to sacrifice his son. Mm. Like it's a very common story. Not a common story, but a very well known story.
Right.
The reason I chose it was because we've been doing so much about the prophets dying and the people of Revelation dying. And I thought I'd like to look one place where God asked somebody to kill somebody and then backed off. Hmm. And maybe talk about God's view of death in that sense.
Hmm.
And also just what he was doing with his friend.
Okay. Hey, that's a pretty good topic for today. That's awesome.
It could work.
Yeah, I had no idea we were talking about this. But anyway, this is awesome. I mean, don't get us wrong. I said just before we started that we're professionals, and you can tell. Anyway, that's great, bud. Where do you want to start?
Well, let me tell you the story of Abraham and just go over the very basic stuff that we all know. We know that Abraham lived till he was 175 years old, that he spent most of his life with his wife, Sarah, you know, after he became of marrying age. So Abraham was born in a place called Ur of the Chaldees.
Yep.
Ur means fire.
Oh,
and if you read in the intertestamental literature, it talks about Abraham being saved out of fire. And it's probably just a playback to Ur of the Chaldees. Chaldea was actually Babylon.
Okay.
Chaldeans were Babylonians. And that's the area that he came from. So he moves from Ur, and he moves up to a place called Haran in the northern part of Babylon with his family. And that's where, and then by that point, he's with Sarah.
Right? Okay.
Okay. And he's, now this whole thing, Abraham's whole journey, like from Ur to over to Jerusalem might be 400 or 500 kilometers. From Haran to Jerusalem is about 200 kilometers, you know, down to Egypt. So the whole story happens in about what would take us about 6 hours to drive.
Right. Okay.
In that, if I was talking to people up here in the north, I'd say it'd be from here to high level, which means nothing to anybody.
Yeah.
I realize. Or it would be from
Calgary to Kelowna or Kamloops or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. So that's what the whole thing. Now you're walking, so it takes a little bit longer,
right,
you know, to get anywhere. You don't have the cars. So I'm pretty sure. So Abraham's about 75 years old, and God calls him. And here's the intriguing part. Here is that Abraham, at the time that God called him, I would say was a pagan.
Mm.
I would say that. That, you know, in Babylon, you know, they had gods. They believed in gods. They had idols. They carried them around. They might have all of this kind of stuff, but they didn't believe in the God of Israel.
Yeah.
Necessarily,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so Abraham was just really a guy, you know, and living out his life, and God calls him, and you don't know in this story he calls him right out of the blue, like. He's wandering in his field one day, and all of a sudden God talks to him.
Right.
And has him, wants him to move, right? So he's going to move. So God calls him, and he takes his wife, and he goes to Egypt with her. or he travels with her, and they end up in Egypt eventually. And Abraham, he gets a lot of criticism for this, but he says to Pharaoh, she's my sister. He says, tell him that you're my sister, because I don't want them to kill me. And he's not completely lying. He's just mostly lying. Yeah. And so she says, well, I'm his sister. And Pharaoh says, well, I'll bring you in. You can be one of my wives. And here's the beautiful thing is that she was about 65 years old when this happened.
Yeah.
So,
question.
Yeah. We don't want to do much sexist stuff here, but
I remember our former colleague Craig Evans told me once, this is way back in Old Testament Survey, because I had Craig Evans for Old Testament Survey. Okay. Oh gosh, I'm really dating myself. Like, this is like 35 years ago.
I wonder if he's still alive.
Oh, Craig Evans is still alive. Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. But he said he kind of played with the fact that this can't be the regular old 65-year-old woman. Well, he said,
we're getting in trouble, you know.
Okay. Well, he said,
this is Craig Evans, not us, right?
Yeah. Well, and he said Abraham cannot be the regular old 75-year-old man either, right? Because he's walking these great distances, doing these crazy things, leads a battle, all this kind of stuff is happening later on in his life.
Yeah.
So is there any credence to that? Like, was Craig out to lunch, or what's the deal there?
Well, there are people that don't believe the dates are ever right in the Old Testament. Like, they just don't. But I'm comfortable to think that he was 75 years old and she was 65 years old when this happened. I believe that was her actual age.
Yeah.
And either she was just beautiful for a 65-year-old, or, Egypt is a hot, dry country, And
so
I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of Egyptians, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
The three or four Egyptians I knew were all men, and the only thing I remember about them is they couldn't get Canadian names to save their lives when they were doing filing for me. But I think she was, I don't know, Steve. The only thing I know for sure is that Pharaoh wanted her.
Yeah.
And then Pharaoh takes her in, and then God strikes Pharaoh with plagues.
Yeah.
And eventually he gives her back and gives Abraham all kinds of gifts.
Yeah.
So his lie really paid off.
Yeah. Yeah. Pharaoh played the correlation game. Hang on. When I did this, that happened. So therefore.
Therefore, I'm going to give Abraham a bunch of gifts. Give him back his sister. And we're going to get out of here.
Yeah.
So Abraham then, they go back, and they go back to Canaan, right?
Right.
And they live in Canaan, which is, which is the promised land, which is, the Palestine area.
Right.
And they live there for a while, and they're so successful with their herds that he's there with his nephew Lot, and they have to separate the herds. And so Abraham says to Lot, take whatever you want. And Lot says, well, I'll take this area, around Sodom and Gomorrah was a beautiful area. And Abraham took the other part.
Sure.
And they usually say that Abraham was very generous there, and he probably was.
Mm-hmm.
He was generous. Lot goes down there, and all the stuff that happens with Lot. But one of the things that happens is Lot gets taken, and Abraham goes, and he has a battle.
Right.
And I don't want to get these ones mixed up, but there's the four kings against the five. And Abraham's in this battle. They take it over. He wins an incredible amount of stuff. They get all the plunder from the battle.
Right.
Right. And Abraham comes back, and he gives a tenth to Melchizedek.
Okay.
And Melchizedek, remember, the name means king of righteousness, right?
Okay. Yeah.
King of he was the king of Salem, and he becomes later on. He becomes the priest that they used to talk about Jesus.
Right.
So he's the guy they say, well, Jesus was in the line of Melchizedek, right? And people have all these ideas about Melchizedek. Was he just a pagan priest? Or was he an angel? Or some people thought he was an early type of Christ, like a form of Christ. What they used to call that, pre-something of Christ.
proto-Christ?
A proto, a proto. He was a prototype.
Yeah. No, that's so, wow, they really had to go on a limb for that one, don't they?
He was a pre-incarnate form of Christ.
Yeah, they heard him. Wow.
That's what he was. And so, and we don't know what he was for sure, but we know that Abraham ties to him.
Mm.
Right. And then God after that makes his covenant with Abraham where he says, your name is Abram, and I will now call you Abraham.
Right.
Because you're going to be the father of a mighty nation, right? And it's 20 to 25 years later, right, before he has his first son with Sarah,
right,
who is Isaac. In the meantime, he has a son named Ishmael.
Right.
You know? And then with his maidservant Hagar,
right,
which bothers some of us, but I'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
And then when he's 99 years old, God renews the covenant with him and has the covenant of circumcision with him, right?
Right.
And he circumcised Ishmael. So now you know why Ishmael was so angry.
Yeah, that's right.
He was about 13, they think, when this
happened. Thanks, Dad.
This is way before they had a lot of drugs for pain.
Yeah.
And so Abraham has this promise, but he's still 20, 25 years before Isaac is born.
Okay.
And then Ishmael leaves with Hagar, and because Sarah gets so upset, it was Sarai, and they changed her name to Sarah, and she gets all upset about this, and kicks Hagar out, and Ishmael becomes a mighty nation himself, right? And then Sarah is promised this son. Remember, the angels come and they see Abraham, and they say, you know, you're gonna have a son, and Sarah laughs.
Yeah, yeah.
So they call their son Isaac, which means laughter.
Yeah.
And people often say it was terrible of her to laugh and not believe God. I don't think there's nothing in Scripture that says God cared at all. I mean, you know, it's a good joke on an old lady.
Yeah.
That she's going to have this son. So I don't know how it all goes. But they have a son named Isaac, right?
Yeah.
And Isaac is the son of promise. And that's the cool thing about this is a guy's entire life. Like, God makes a promise to him when he's 75 years old. He leaves, and then he makes another promise to him, and he's like 99 before this thing's fulfilled.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we decided is that God is the greatest procrastinator there is. You know, he just really takes a long time to get anything done. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you often say, you know, if he's made you a promise, wait.
Yeah.
And if he's made you promise, just because you've screwed up and said your wife is your sister and done these other things in your life, doesn't mean he's going to take away that promise.
Yeah. Well, even trying to jump the gun with Hagar, right? Like,
yeah.
Here, I got a plan for it. No, no, no. That's not what I got in mind, Abram.
That's right. And I'm going to do good stuff with them. Yeah. You know, they're going to cause your people grief for the rest of eternity, mind you. But here he is with Isaac, and now Isaac is a young teenager, and God comes to Abraham and says, "All right, Abraham, I promised you. You remember the promise? You're gonna have children like the sand. If you can count the sand, or if you can count the stars in the sky, then right, you could count the number of offspring you're gonna have." He has one kid in his whole life, that's a son of the promise, and God says, "No. What I want you to do is take him and kill him."
Mm. Yeah, and talk about a shock there, right? Like, I'm sorry, say it, come again?
and there's one thing that I think is really critical here. I don't think God could do that to you or me, Steve. I don't think God could come to us and say, you know, I gave you one child, I want you to sacrifice. There's nothing in our experience that allows for that, right?
Right.
Like, God couldn't ask us to kill our pets, you know, nowadays.
Yeah.
Because everything that we're taught and everything that's a part of our cultural experience is all about the right to life and live and protect life, you know.
Buddy, that's a great point, because Abraham wouldn't have thought twice about it, right? Because he came out of a pagan background.
That's right. He would have come out of a background where this was an acceptable practice.
Yeah.
Now, he might have hated it and, right. you know, been torn apart by it, but it wouldn't have been unusual for that kind of thing to happen.
Isn't it interesting, right? Because I've heard so many sermons about people trying to justify Abraham's actions here. It's like, oh, well, he knew that God would restore Isaac to him. Or he, you know, he knew that, you know, somehow Isaac was, you know, going to be revived days later, or, you know, at the time or whatever. Crazy, right? Because that doesn't take into effect Abraham's mindset of, well, if you ask me to do it, you ask me to do it. This is common in our culture.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not unknown to me, at least it's not unknown.
Yeah.
And it was a Western writer, Louis L'Amour.
Mm.
And he said, you have to judge. Now he said a man, of course, because that was his time.
Yeah.
He said, you have to judge, I'll say a person. You have to judge a person by the standards of their time, not by our standards.
Right.
And so if you're judging somebody from the West, you have to judge them from that time that they lived.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Makes total sense.
And yeah, yeah, yeah. And he would talk about, you know, people, the wars that went on and people killing each other and taking over. And it was very common. Now we look back on it, we're horrified by it.
Right.
But anyway, so that was Abraham. So he takes his son and he takes him up to Mount Moriah, which is just, by the way, it's just a little bump. It's more of a mountain if you're a prairie person. If you're from BC, you're like, what is this?
Yeah, yeah. The mountain over there. Where?
It's a mountain.
The mountain over there. What? But if you're from Regina, it's huge, right?
Massive if you're from Regina, right? In Saskatchewan, you know, they build a thing, go skiing on, they call the Pimple, which is a little mound of dirt they put on a river that you can ski down. It has a double diamond that's about 30 feet long.
That's awesome.
It's a big drop, but it's not very far.
Yeah.
So Abraham takes him up to Moriah. And I was told, I did read that the Dome of the Rock sits on Mount Moriah as well. Mm-hmm. I keep saying Moriah, and I hope that's the right one. And so he takes Isaac up there. And he gets his servant's with him. He's carrying wood. And remember, the servant says, you know, where's the sacrifice? He said, God will provide the sacrifice.
Yep.
And he gets up on the hill and he actually ties Isaac, which is amazing too, you know, that his son would allow him to do that.
Yeah.
And he ties him. And then God says, don't do it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece in here, if you believe that the first five books were written by Moses, or if you believe that the first five books were written, at least written. Now, I'm fine with Moses writing them, by the way. But if you at least believe that they were written for preparation to enter the land of Canaan, for the people, for the life they were going to live, then God was doing something very specific. He was telling Abraham that he did not want human sacrifice. And they were going back in. Remember? That's what Abraham came out of. But they're also going back into a land where the people there practiced human sacrifice.
Right.
They would, in times of trouble, and now I forgot the name of the two different gods that they would sacrifice to.
Molech?
Molech. Molech is the one. Well, thank you.
Oh, no, not bad, eh?
Yeah, not bad. They build a fire in him, and then his mouth would be open, and you would take your firstborn and let it either roll down into the mouth or something like that. And you'd kill your child. And, you know, your child might be a newborn, or it might be several years old. You know, it could be anything along those lines.
Wow.
And God was saying to the people of Israel, I do not condone human sacrifice.
Right.
Like, when you get there, I don't want that.
Right.
So there was a very specific theological message in what Abraham did.
Would Isaac's acceptance of being tied up, would that be tied up in the culture as well? Sorry for that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that part of it. I don't know if this bringing wood and just building a fire under him would have been common or not.
Well, just in terms of the fact if they practiced child sacrifice, maybe Abraham or Isaac was aware of that. That's kind of where I was flying down. But anyway,
yeah,
interesting.
I'm fine with that, and that's what people say, because, you know, if he is a teenager, I mean. Well, I'd be running at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dad, is that something over there? See if you can catch me, old man.
Yeah, because, you know, and so So God does three things. He does three different things here. The one, he tells him very clearly, I don't want child sacrifice. Hmm. The other thing he does is this is a foreshadowing. This is a pointing forward to what he did with his own son. Hmm. Remember, Michael Card's song is, God will provide a lamb. And then later on in the song, it says, God has provided a lamb to be offered up in your place. And it's about Jesus being offered.
Yeah. And so go ahead. No, go ahead.
Nope, finish.
Well, I was just going to say, so is the whole illusion, I could be way out on a limb here. If you look at Genesis 22, right, you've got this thing of Isaac's about to be killed by Abraham. God says, stop. And all of a sudden, there's a substitute there to take the punishment. Is that the whole thing?
Yeah. And there's that ram, right? And with his horns caught in the thicket. Hmm. And as my Old Testament teacher said, he says, well, he actually swore. So I better not do that. I just realized. Well, he used the word bugger. He says, you should see those buggers run through the bush. They don't get caught in the thicket.
Right.
And so it was very much something that God did to capture this this ram. So so and then the third thing, of course, is that Abraham was God's friend, and they say, and Abraham is the only guy in Scripture, I think, that's called God's friend.
Okay.
Jesus says, you know, you can be my friend if you do what I command you. But they said that Abraham was, and I think Moses was never called God's friend, even though he talked to God face to face. So there's a similar relationship there. But it was just a beautiful view of God asking Abraham to sacrifice his son, because the time was going to come when he would sacrifice his son for all of us.
Okay. Yep.
So it's kind of neat that God can do a lot of things all at one time. Like, he doesn't have to just do one thing.
Right.
Like, he's doing something with Abraham. He's doing something with the promise. He's doing something to tell the people not to sacrifice their children. And he's doing all of this stuff at the same time.
Right.
And all of the things we've been doing lately, I've been saying that God's okay with death. Like, he's okay that his prophets die. And he's okay that the people in Revelation die. So there's something far more important going on in God's economy. But it's also important to know that there are things that he does not want us to do, and he doesn't want us just to willy-nilly kill each other. He doesn't want us to sacrifice our children.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, right? Plays back from, you know, this is my creation and in our image.
Yeah.
So I kind of see the line all of a sudden there too.
Yeah. And so our job is not to go out and kill people.
Right.
Our job is to go out our job is to talk to people about Jesus.
Right.
And see that they become Christians.
Yeah.
Abraham's job was to live for God in the way that he saw, right? And don't forget, he's pre-Moses. Like, he doesn't have anything to go by.
Yeah.
At least that we know of, right?
Right.
Other than the traditions of his time.
And he was called God's friend, right? Or was that?
Yeah, Abraham was called God's friend.
Right. So it's a very different relationship than even the Moses-God relationship.
Yeah. And sometimes when we're talking about it, we say, you know, the biggest thing about friendships is we can expect of our friends what we expect of ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, we would go and do anything for a friend.
Right.
Don't take that to heart.
Yeah. Well, I see.
I'm not putting any more shingles on your roof.
Well, remember, a good friend will help you move a couch. A great friend will help you move a body. okay. Buddy, that was a really, really great lesson for today, right? That we see that there's a point to this story that we easily skip over. That this is God foreshadowing something to the promised land, to the nation of Israel. God's foreshadowing Christ as well. But also that we might have Isaac's mindset completely wrong. Not that this is like him thinking, what am I doing? This is so crazy. But rather that he culturally would have went, all right, dumb, but I hate it. So.
But I can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Buddy, thanks so much. That was awesome.
Thank you, Stephen.
Folks, thanks for joining us on this journey. And thanks for just listening in and doing all this participation with us. We hope that as you listen, we hope that these things are helpful to you as you think about these passages. You know, if you think we probably talked through from maybe Revelation, from Genesis, about what, 12 to 22 in that area, if I remember right. So have a look at that and then, you know, kind of reflect on that as you're listening to the podcast too. So thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back probably in a week's time. You know, Larry and I, we're having fun. We're doing this, right? We'll be back in a week's time for sure. But until next time, thanks for joining us on the Apocalary Podcast.